Celtic Stuff Live.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics. I'm your host, Justin Poulin. Joining me, John Duke, as always. And, dude, I freaking hate August. I'm just going to be honest with you. August stinks. August stinks because, yeah, you know, we're right around the corner is training camp, right? It's right around the corner. There's not a whole lot of new meat. We do have a few things to talk about, but, you know, we're going to talk about Cedric Maxwell and Celtics beat with Adam Kaufman and, you know, essentially what I'm going to call manufactured drama. Like, this is what we got to do in August. This is what we have to do in August. But we do get some sneak peeks at the schedule. We're going to lead with that. We'll talk about Jaylen Brown and his comments expecting to be playing in June and having a shot at the title and feeling underrated, and I happen to agree with that. Last year, I think I predicted 55 wins with a healthy squad. So look at that. Now they're going to bring back two players that are absolutely exceptional and younger players that, I mean, I remember this time last year we started arguing about the rotation and whether or not they had any depth. And, you know, turns out you were wrong and you were wrong.
Oh, well. Glad we put it that way. I know it's totally foreseeable. Holy crap, man.
No, I told you though. I told you that was a lot.
Oh, I know you did. Team. Justin's right. John's wrong.
But come on, man. I did say that that team was deeper than you realized, and they definitely proved it in the win column. And they got severely injured across the board.
Oh.
Yet the depth was there. The rotation was there. Here's the other thing though. I even got the rotation right, except we only really got to see it for about the first 6 minutes. But, you know, I had said that Brown and Tatum would be in the starting lineup, and there was some question marks about that. I think that's what we're going to see again this year, and I do think the team is deeper than ever just based on the fact that the players got plenty of run. One thing with the schedule, though, considering we're kicking it off against Philadelphia with LeBron going to the West Coast, it's pretty obvious they want to tout these two rebuilding teams, rebuilding in different ways, young teams with some pretty staunch fan bases, I might add. Philly's got a pretty strong fan base. Boston's got a pretty strong fan base. They're all right close by each other in the Northeast. So, you know, not if the Knicks were good, it's not like Yankees, Red Sox were in Connecticut. You clash the fan bases in this meld of opposition. You don't quite aren't quite that close, but the cities are pretty close. I would say it's a nice one. Having this be the potential future sort of head to head and leading it off that way is smart. And I think it'll be, I think opening night will be a lot of fun. And, you know, I hope it goes a lot like it did in the postseason.
Yeah. I'm glad they started with Philly. I don't think I'm not so keen on having both marquee games early in the season be against Philly, but not because I'm worried about the Sixers getting the better of the Celtics, but I just, you know, I like to see different matchups and see different ways for the teams to line up. And, you know, maybe that's, I would suspect part of what forced that, the Christmas Day game in particular is a desire to really see the Celtics be able to play closer to home and Philly play closer to home with the holiday. So, and you look at the Warriors and the Lakers, probably the same idea. You stay on the West Coast. They're not exactly close as Philly and Boston are, but you know, that's probably what the NBA is trying to do. I just, you know, I'm glad they're doing it. I wonder if the Celtics will actually start the lineup that you would like, because if you're going to play against Philly, aren't you going to put Horford on Simmons and the big boy, all of Australia, Aaron Baines on, Mr. Mouthy,
Who are you putting on the bench?
I mean,
who are you putting on the bench?
I don't care.
I don't care.
Or
Brad Stevens. Fine. Predict who's going to the bench for Baines. Tell me.
Well, tell me how Gordon Hayward looks after his first training camp. Then I can tell you the answer. Tell me somebody isn't going to hurt themselves
okay,
did.
Never mind. You're legitimately, right now I'm calling a major foul. You're already predicting injuries before the season starts and that those injuries happen before the season starts. right there. That's just taboo. That's some bad juju.
Oh, come on.
Does it matter? No. We're going to suspend you. We're going to suspend you from Celtics Stuff Live for 6 weeks.
You can walk under every ladder, break every window, and not have anything nearly as bad as what happened last year.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
No. It does matter. The whole point was Celtics are immortal. No. Hospital Celtics is not what we want this year. We lived through it. It was an underachieving team. It was a great way to deal with some disappointment, but it's not what the fan base wants whatsoever. That's bad, Juju. You're paying a fine. You got a 6-week suspension.
I'm handing it down
from the league office.
Yeah, okay.
That bad Juju is no good. And you only used it to dodge the question.
Just because you're wrong. They're not going to start.
Fine, but that's not the question. Fine, you're right.
It's not the question.
No, that's the question. No, that is my question. I'm saying right now, you're right. They're not going small in game one.
Yeah.
Who's going to the bench? Hayward looks healthy. Kyrie is healthy. Everybody's healthy. World's perfect, just like it started last year. Who's going to the bench?
I'd sit at Brown.
So you're going to put Hayward at shooting guard?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, who's he going to
be? Maybe. It's either Tatum or Hayward.
Yeah, probably. I mean, have him chase around. I mean, maybe you don't want him chasing around Hayward. I mean, I probably would.
I'm not worried about the defense in that game. I absolutely think you go small, and I think you try to bring everybody out, space the crap out of it, shoot the lights out. If they're not shooting hot and they're not passing well, you make an early sub for Baines in that case. But I think you absolutely go small, just like you did the beginning of last year, and you try to force your will on other teams offensively. I mean, I get what you're saying. I see the defensive liability potential, but I also look at it on the other side that, man, if they can play some sound defense, know that they're going to give up some mismatches, but any of those misses, they start running the other way. And remember, Philly still isn't spacing the floor all that well. It's just JJ. So you're going to want Brown out there. If you put Brown on the bench, you're giving up a different matchup potentially.
Yeah, but who are their best players though? I mean, their best players are, if it's not Simmons and it's not Embiid, who's going to beat you?
Fultz? Well, if it's not Simmons and it's Embiid, then it's Redick. That's the number three.
But that's
my point. You're only taking my point.
But if you're letting the third best player on their team beat you, supposedly, I think that's a win for the Celtics, right? And by beating you, you're saying, well, I'm going to put an all-star swingman on a 6'1 shooting guard who has to run off screens to get his offense. I mean, frankly, I'll take that trade-off as opposed to letting Embiid show, what he did against Horford and try to have, Tatum or Hayward, who hasn't played in exactly 12 months, to try to guard against Simmons. To me, that just seems like you're asking for too much. Don't overthink it.
I totally think Tatum can handle another night. Fine. Remember, they're not shooting from the outside. You know what I mean? But my point is you can pack the defense down a little low. Go ahead and let Embiid go off a little bit.
Pack the defense off of the shooters?
Yeah.
So leave JJ Redick because Tatum isn't going to be able to keep Simmons in front of him.
I think Brown will be able to recover just fine.
Well,
this is my point. I'm not saying they're not going to score and they're not going to expose a mismatch. My point is I'd rather have us just destroying them on offense. I mean, just think about the 3-point shooting. Mm-hmm. Kyrie, Hayward, even Horford, right? And he may not even have to. You might be feeding him crazy in the post potentially, but seriously, that starting lineup, everybody can shoot threes. Every single one of them can shoot threes. What they really should be looking at this season is how do they work the backdoor cut with Brown? I mean, he's so good in the post, right? And he's a threat from the corner, but that's where you start that backdoor cut. If you've got everybody else spaced out beyond the arc and they can all shoot threes, I mean, cutters galore there because there's enough athleticism. And then they can even kind of get that mid-range going where, Tatum sets up at the elbow, that whole Paul Pierce, Harold, you go back to that and ISO him a little bit. I just think there's so much offense to be generated. If you come out in game one and you throw up a cool 20 points in 6 minutes, and it's doable, right? If they're hot from outside and the shots are falling and you just smack them in the mouth that fast and stake a lead, then you bring in Baines because the team's frustrated, right? They might be exposing, you know, the defensive liability. But if you come out and just throw up crazy points super fast, hit them in the mouth, and then bring in Baines and try to frustrate Embiid from there, I think that's a winning combo. More than bring out, you know, Baines and Philly keeps hanging in there, and then you start working into your rotations, and, you know, maybe somebody gets hot, maybe not. I'd rather see Kyrie just dribble the crazy all over the place, get the ball movement going, hit shots from outside, have those guys all over place on defense so they're tired out, and then that way they don't want to wear them out. You know, on offense, they start to get worn out. I think the defense almost plays itself a little bit in that starting lineup if you're just killing them on offense.
I think we're going to see how that team, how they mesh in preseason. I think that's going to play a big role in what happens. You know, we never got a chance to see what that team looks like, right, together. We did see what Baines looks like with the others, minus Hayward. And, you know, there's a reason why he was the top net rating guy in the whole league. It wasn't because, you know, he's big and he's all of Australia. He had a tangible impact next to Horford, yes. On the floor with Kyrie, yes. But that in particular, we saw that against Philly in the playoffs, the value of having a big body. And obviously then what that meant for allowing Horford to range and do a lot of different things out there as opposed to take that beating. I think fully Horford's on the court, and that lineup that we're talking about closes the game. But to me, to start, I'd rather have Baines out there and to do really what you talked about a lot last year, which is to stagger some of these minutes with guys like Hayward and so forth, so that way you are always having scoring on the floor. You're not going into the a second unit where we certainly saw that Rozier struggled on the road, and allow for more of a veteran scorer to join that second unit and let him run.
But look at the second five. You know what I mean? If you start my lineup, you've got Baines, Morris, Smart, Rozier, and Tice. And I know that's where you get hung up, right, is the Tice-Baines. That's why you want to put Baines in, is because you want to rotate Tice into that, you know, without having the two of them. But I think, you know, that's, you're down to the 10th man when you get to Tice. And, you know, I think they have to make, I think they're ultimately, if you just take talent on the team, top 8, 9, Tyson Baines, great players, situational, will get minutes, but I think they're essentially playing for the same minutes. And it depends on matchups for the two of those guys. I mean, I love Baines and I'm glad he took a hit and everything else, but you gotta respect what Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart and Rozier, have to offer, you know, off the bench. And they basically fill in that 1 through 3, 4. You know, cause we'll see Morris at the 4 a little bit, but they cover that 1 through 3 range. So I know they're not deep on the big man rotation, but I think you go small for that reason.
Brad doesn't do 8, 9, right? He's going to play 10, 11, especially in the first half of the year. We're going to have a lot of this is going to be a deep rotation. Ojale is going to be in games. I mean, they're going to spread this out.
I don't know. There's 10, 11 every game, though. That's where you get
it. It's a lot, though. It's a lot. He's always
If they get leads.
No, he's always done it. I mean, he's like Larkin. We saw Larkin way more than we really should have based upon talent. But the fact is that he likes to stretch that out. And thank goodness he did. Thank goodness he didn't listen to me in the preseason and say he doesn't have a bench and listen to you and said, okay, well, then we can play these guys. You know, and he stretched it out. That's why I think, you know, you may be right that they do go small, but then it also creates some problems there with trying to spread it out. And I don't know. I mean, I guess Hayward is the one I'm particularly looking at, is what is his lateral movement? I mean, you know, we saw some stuff on Instagram the other day where he was working on his lateral quickness. If his defense isn't there, that's going to be the easy move, right? That's going to be easy. He's the sixth man. He comes in and he does does that role, and he could fit that to a T. Does a little bit of everything, but defensively, maybe he doesn't quite have the quickness just yet. We don't know. We don't know what he's going to look like. I have more faith in Kyrie coming back and looking like his old self than I do Hayward. But I don't think Hayward, I don't think this is like an ACL. This isn't like an Achilles, you know.
I think the bigger issue there is going to be confidence. Confidence, sure, in the ankle. Sure. I mean, I get it all off season, you know, he's working on it and, you know, he's walking around, everything feels great, yeah, but there's just something I think that's going to, you know, be about getting back on the floor, and there's going to be confidence in the ankle, and that's I think that'll be a hard thing to get back into. Do I think he's going to do any alley-oops this season? No, I don't.
Yeah, maybe not.
I think the alley-oops are gone. I think that was a showtime. I mean, I think that was just like, let's come out, you know, and Kyrie and everybody, let's punch the bully in the mouth. You know, this is the team I just left. Like, it's the first game of the year. Let's give them something to see. And, you know, but I don't know that we would have seen alley-oops all year long from Kyrie to Hayward. I don't think that was going to be a big staple in that offense.
I don't know. I mean, that was a play he ran in Utah, which was part of the reason why I think he was running it for him, trying to make him feel comfortable. But yeah, I mean, in the end, it was definitely something of, here we are. We're going to make a statement here. It was a close game. You know, I'm going to let Cleveland know I'm here, you know, and I don't think that there was anything malicious intended by it. It's more of just that competitive fire going, but
no, that's what I mean. It was a big, you know, the lights were on. I don't expect to see that a lot in there. I mean, how many not this year, but how many alley-oops do you ever really see the Celtics do? I mean, there's some. Yeah, but not many. And their athleticism is there. I mean, you can't tell me that they couldn't run plays for Jaylen Brown on alley-oops and expect him to finish. You know what I mean? Like, as long as he beats his man, as long as the opening is there, I just don't think they run a lot of them. I'm not saying they're completely absent, but I think it's more that, you know, Kyrie, you're kind of calling the shots. It's in the playbook and, you know, it's something that the floor general calls out here and there, but I don't think it's something that they spend a lot of time on in practice. I could be wrong. But, you know, you're vulnerable You're vulnerable when you're up there.
I think it's more in pick and roll situations. I think Smart really is probably one who did it as often as anyone in pick and roll situations and finding the roll guy. You know, you wouldn't see Kyrie probably.
But you're already behind the defender in that case. You're not even
that's
at
what
risk.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well,
totally.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I mean.
That's not what that play was.
Dynamic.
Right. That's what I was going to say. The Hayward play, that wasn't that play. That wasn't the pick and roll. No. That was, so you're right. I do think there's plenty of space for it in the pick and roll once you get around the man. Yeah. But I think otherwise, I think it's a dangerous play. And I think they're going to avoid it in general.
But to your point though, earlier, which is like Jaylen Brown and wanting to see more backdoor cuts from him. That's kind of the play right there, man. You know, like that's the, if that can be the devastating weapon for him. And I think you're right. That's where, you know, Kyrie's going to have the ball. You know, Gordon's going to have the ball. You know, Horford's going to have the ball. They're going to be making plays. And if you're off ball, you got to find ways to be a threat. And we know that Tatum is going to have that gravity. Players are going to be drawn to him. Who's the player who doesn't have the gravity? Who's not drawing a defender to them as closely as everyone else? Obviously, it's Jaylen. So let's see what happens. And we know he's got a high opinion of what this team can do, right?
Well, that's a great transition. First, I'm just going to remind everybody you can follow Celtic Stuff Live on Twitter at @CSL_TweetLive. You can follow me at @CSL_Justin. And I will tell you, and this is really no feat at all. It's almost embarrassing, but you know, I have not cracked the 1,000 mark on Twitter followers yet, John. I am finally at, I've made it to 999. Lost one, probably a bot. I'm down to 998, but I am right there hoping to crack 1K. So I've been behind the eight ball in Twitter followers, but it probably has a lot to do with just not quite enough activity. You, on the other hand, have well over 1,000 followers at @CSL_Duke. Keep chalking up that tally. The entire CLNS Media Network at CLNS Media, facebook.com/CLNS fans. Download the CLNS Media app for iOS and Android. Simply search CLNS Media in your app marketplace. Finally, the YouTube channel, youtube.com/CLNS Media for high definition, full length locker room interviews and the Garden Report, and the Round Table. And then obviously on the app, you will be able to listen to not our next, topic of conversation, but the one that's sitting on deck. You can listen to Celtics Beat and Adam Kaufman's interview with Maxwell. If you haven't already, Cedric Maxwell, or Max as he's fondly called, you can listen to that and then catch the third sort of segment of the show. But let's talk about Jaylen Brown. He's got high hopes for this squad. He expects to be playing in June. It's almost more than expects. He's almost exuding a very, very high level of almost arrogance, I would say, John.
Yeah, and that's certainly not something his coach would have suggested he say, but he did, and he laid it out there. And unlike a previous guest on C.J. McCollum's podcast, he didn't actually end up having to battle with him over the answers that he gave. But yeah, he said, you know, look, we're going to the finals. This is happening, you know, and I respect him for his optimism and you know, a certitude, I guess, in his opinion. I agree with him. Well, look, I mean, you know, I think without LeBron, I think everyone is giving him, I don't know if they're giving them a pass, but they're certainly looking at him and saying, well, yeah, they're in that spot. You know, they're the best, they're the king of the
East. It really should be. I mean, the Kawhi Leonard thing is really up in the air. You know, that could be a big win for them. I'm still putting it on the 35 to 40%. It's a success, and 20%, it's a huge, overwhelming win that pays off even in the off season. We've talked about it before. It's a positive, it's a solid calculated risk, and one that allows a franchise to, you know, proverbially crap or get off the pot, right? So that's where they're at. I actually applaud the move. So outside of that, and that's game two, right? So they play the first game against Philly, like we talked about. Game two is going to be against Toronto. It's pretty clear how the league sees it and how Vegas sees it. Those are the top three teams in the East. LeBron's out of the way. It does make perfect sense after the Celtics had great success against Philadelphia with a not healthy squad. And then looking at the potential gamble that is Toronto, and really, the Celtics have no excuses for not being there. So, on the other hand, Jaylen's just kind of put the pressure on themselves and saying, we got to see what we're made of. You know, we got to get this group in here. It's really incumbent on us to be able to maintain chemistry. The question is, as you know, would expect, and this is why I also think they go small, at some point, they're going to be damaged to egos on this club. You know, if they were able to re-sign everybody, there's going to be guys sitting on the bench that just aren't going to be comfortable with it. You know, yeah. I think we can all agree Terry Rozier is the backup plan next offseason. If they don't sign Kyrie, they sign Rozier. If they do sign Kyrie, then Rozier's going to go. I mean, on his own, they're just not going to be able to sign him. He's, you know, well, there's the whole restricted thing, but even if they do, it'll be short term. They won't sign him long term. Right. By committing, unless they trade Marcus Smart, by committing 4 years to Smart, you know, it is what it is. I do believe, though, that Marcus is comfortable with a six-man role. And because of his shooting abilities, almost kind of understands he has to be, but also knows that he can be in the closing lineup. He knows he can impact games. He knows he's crucial. So he wanted a fair contract. I think it's mostly fair. I think the Celtics didn't have to give him that, but I think they did for a multitude of reasons, you know, loyalty, tradability, you know, a lot of different things there. So they have the flexibility, but if they were really to just keep all of these players, at some point there is going to be some frustration on the bench. And that's where I think there is potential for there to be chemistry issues this year. And if they don't go over 60 wins, we'll be able to point at one of two things: injuries again, or chemistry issues because of exactly that. Not enough minutes to go around.
Yeah, that could very well be. I think a couple tools in Brad Stevens' toolbox that he'll be using. One is he's going to keep those minutes down for Horford, Kyrie, and Hayward. I mean, I think those guys are going to play a lot fewer minutes than maybe we might suspect for a big three. You know, to go back to our old 2008 days, you know, when the team didn't have the Garnett, Pierce, Allen on the floor, it wasn't quite the same team. the Celtics, this Celtics crew is going to play, I bet probably they're playing around 30, 32 minutes for those guys for much of the year, which is going to open up opportunities for a lot of players. You know, guys like Ogilvy and Tice, you know, those kind of 9, 10, 11 players, maybe Wanamaker, all those guys are going to have opportunities. I think surprising number of opportunities because that's the way Brad does things. Injuries will dictate somewhat, but I do think that there will be times when, you know, we saw this last year where he'll just say, look, we're not going to play Horford. Horford's out. You know, he's going to sit this game, you know, and there'll be enough of those, I think, sprinkled through the calendar where the Celtics will be able to get the rest they need. We're not going to have the injuries, even though the juju or whatever, you know, bad hocus pocus or whatever it is that we were talking about earlier. I think they're going to, he's going to pick and choose those times.
Seriously, fine and suspension.
Okay.
You must be punished.
I must be punished for these
I'm pretty sure, listen, everybody out there, all of our followers, at CSL underscore Justin, at CSL underscore Duke, at CSL underscore Tweet Live, talk to me. Right? The ban has to be on.
Listen, all we went through this year. After all we went through this year, there is nothing.
Precisely why we don't want to go through it again next year.
It's impossible.
It's not impervious. This is not
impossible. It doesn't occur. It doesn't happen. It can't happen. I mean, I would love to say, you know, I had that kind of power. I just don't. What happened to Hospital Celtics last year, it cannot be duplicated. It cannot be imitated. It's its own special thing. Thank God. let it rest. Let it die. All healthy, all year, 70 wins. Let's go, baby. You know, I mean, it's pedal to the metal. Weird. It's weird. Yeah. But I don't mind Jalen saying that. The East is wide open. The West, not so much. Look, if it were closer, that'd be one thing. And I think, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, Toronto's going to be this, Toronto's going to be that. We don't know what Toronto's going to be. I agree with you. We can't. Don't know.
No.
Boston is the most obvious, honestly, number one.
It's crazy to think, and they will have a stellar defense in Toronto, but it is possible that they're the fourth seed. Mm-hmm. Even potentially the fifth. Most likely, I think they actually, you know, they'll battle Philly. It really kind of depends. You know what I mean? I think they'll be the two seed, but very easily could be the three. But you know what? We don't even know what Milwaukee's going to do. Honestly, right?
Could be really tough.
Yeah.
You know, I think Bud is going to be tough. I think he's a really good addition. The coach there, I think he's going to change the whole mix of things, but they also made a lot of weird signings and the way that their cap sheet's kind of laid out, they're in a spot where this could be it. Like if they don't make a huge leap this year, things are going to start falling away.
The pressure's on.
Yep. Brogdon's got money. And then if they don't re-sign, then you know Giannis has got one foot out the door when he's a free agent, I think 2 years from then. So there's a lot riding on this year for the Milwaukee Bucks. So we'll say, yeah, I think they are comfortably in that 3-4 range. I think it's going to be Boston. It's going to be Toronto and then Philly. Maybe. I mean, Philly could drop out of this. Philly could fall down to fifth. Milwaukee and Indiana could leapfrog them. You know, I think we're kind of
possible.
We're expecting.
And you're right about Indiana. There. Indiana was surprised last year, and now they've got a year with that team and that chemistry building. They definitely could continue to move up, and they got a little bit younger in a way. I mean,
they did some good signings.
They did.
They did some free agency.
Yeah. Yep.
So let's
move on from that. We'll preview the standings maybe in 2 weeks from now. And just so everybody knows, we're going every other week till we get through these August doldrums. Although on to the last topic, I can't believe we were actually able to do about 30 minutes on what we've done already. That's pretty impressive. But on to the final topic, we have Adam Kaufman's Celtics beat. Cedric Maxwell hops on there. And then creates really what I would consider it's kind of a disgusting even comparison or debate to get into.
Yeah.
Like you just can't, and I don't say this with disrespect to either because John, you know how fond of KG and his mentality I am. right? But I would still rank Pierce above KG for the same reason that I don't think this debate is even fair, because KG didn't spend his whole career with the Celtics and Larry Bird did. And so I'm sorry, guys. And I know it extended beyond even Maxwell wasn't the only one. Are we just ranking the player KG over the duration, regardless of his tenure? Are we including time in Minnesota and Brooklyn in that debate? Like, I get it. They won a championship, but Larry Bird was Captain Clutch 100%, and he spent his entire career with the Celtics. And so if we're going to take Celtics who had great careers, who once donned a Celtics jersey, then I'm going to put Shaq in the top three.
Well, look, I mean, there's a bit of recency bias with all this. And let's be fair. I mean, as you
now,
said,
it's
I love
a generational, it's an intentional it generational.
Well, that's it. Like, that's right. That's
like
recency
media
bias.
Baloney manufactured. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not, it's generational recency bias, like versus the old school, but it's mm-hmm. still, it's, it, you would have to go Pierce versus Bird, but they know they can't do that. As great as Pierce was, they know they can't do that. But Garnett, they can do it with. The problem is what you really need to say is, if Pierce and KG were actually one person, would they be better than Larry Bird? Right? Because you've got to have both factors. You've got to have tenure in the organization, and you have to have the ability to totally change and impact culture and attitude. And that's why, that's what they had in common. Right? Larry was tough as nails, mouthy as hell. You know what I mean? That part they had in common. Larry gets the cake because he was here for his entire career. And if you're going to ask me, does Kevin Garnett in the duration of his entire career, including Minnesota time, match up against Bird? Absolutely he does. I think there's a debate there. But if you're saying best Celtics, no, there's no debate. Larry spent his entire time in a Celtics jersey. He was in show, the era of Showtime, that whole Celtics-Lakers rivalry, as much as it was renewed to some degree in 08 through 12 or 11, you know, that was a great time, but it wasn't what really took the NBA to, you know, really made basketball global, made it entertaining. Like, there's more to this pie from what was going on in the league itself that contributes to this conversation as well. So it's not only recency bias, it's also nearsighted.
Well, it's, yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about who said what. But, you know, so on NBC Sports Boston, they kind of, you know, Max relays this and you know, they had a conversation and they were ranking them. And they said, well, one, it's got to be Bill Russell, right? Because he's, you know, the greatest defensive player in the NBA history. Two, obviously, is Garnett. And then,
They say that.
Right.
I don't understand how Kuzi's not in that conversation
It's all around. So the argument is like you said, it's this defense and offense, the mix of the player, you know, good on this end, good at that end, you makes you a better all around player. And then Havlicek was third Kyle Draper. Kyle Draper had Havlicek third, and then he had Bird fourth. And Max had Bird third. Listen, okay. Larry Bird, let's talk about Larry Bird. Okay, school's in session, folks. School's in session. Larry Bird was a three-time All-NBA
player. Is this your attempt
player
to come off of suspension and
no,
not have
no, to pay the fine? No, listen. Larry Bird is a third, three-time All-Defensive Team player, okay? This is not like, oh, he's just some guy. Three-time MVP, right? When you go back to defensive win shares, okay, all-time Celtics, number one is Bill Russell. Number two is John Havlicek. Now remember, John Havlicek played 17 seasons. Larry Bird, third, 59 win shares. Okay. Paul Pierce, fourth, 56. Now.
Whoa.
Right?
Really?
Yeah.
That's a surprising one. I mean, I'm not saying Paul wasn't a decent defender, but like early in the career, Just, right. I mean, maybe that's the Jim O'Brien era coming out with the stats.
You got 15 seasons, right? Healthy for a majority of that one season where he only played 30 games. You know, Bird had 13 season, but obviously missed one entirely with the ankle, with the Achilles bone spurs, and then the back really wrecked the last two seasons. So Russell was really healthy throughout his 13 years. But so this is the one that you kind of, when you look at these amalgamations of what makes a good defense, good offense, right? Okay. So win shares per 48, which is defense and offense, right? Number one is Easy Ed McCauley, going back to the '50s, talking about your, you know, eras impacting things in a small career. Isaiah Thomas is number two. Number three, Larry Joe Bird. Number four, Bill Russell. Five, Kevin Garnett. So that's a good, you know, indicator of, okay, win shares per 48. Now, of course, you can say, well, Isaiah played, you know, only three seasons. Bird had 13. McCauley had, I think, five or six. Garnett had eight or nine. You know, you can compare Bird, Russell, Garnett in that order, right? Box plus minus. Bird, Larry Bird, 7.2. Next person, Isaiah, 4. Value over replacement player, Larry Bird, 79.7. Then Paul Pierce, then Robert Parrish, McHale, then on we go. It is a complete joke, anyone out there for to pick anybody other than Larry Bird or Bill Russell. I'm sorry. I love Kevin Garnett. I love what he did here. He did not have to carry anywhere near the offensive weight that Larry Bird did. He didn't have to carry the weight that Kevin McHale did in the years of 86.
As a matter of fact, it was a criticism during Garnett's tenure.
Yes.
Why did he keep going to the baseline fadeaway? Why does he keep going to the baseline fadeaway? Right. Why don't we see him stuff it down their throat? Right? Why is he deferring to other scorers? And I mean, it made sense in many ways to have Ray Allen and Paul Pierce shoot the ball and for him to focus on defense. And I get that. But when you combine what I said earlier, the fact that he didn't don the jersey the entire time, and man, I struggle with this because it bothers me because of how much I appreciated Garnett's stay.
Yeah.
You know, and is he one of, like, if we were ranking favorite players, sure, he's definitely up there. He's done, and he's, and probably for me, he is above Bird just because, you know, I got to see it firsthand. You know what I mean? But none of that is statistical or reality or even in the context of what this debate was set up as, right? And that was, you know, that really what you're saying is the debate is best two-way player. Best player to
Right.
And so then you really just go to plus minus. I mean, I don't know that you really, I mean, for taking enough of a sample size, plus minus to me says it all. Especially when you're comparing teams that were in the postseason year after year, like that Paul Pierce plus minus is actually a little skewed given the fact that there was a long time there. I mean, just look at the plus minus from the season right before the trade for Ray Allen and the trade for Kevin Garnett, right? You know, that team was so bad without Paul. It was ridiculous. And that right there is skewed. But when you talk about Bird, that team was a playoff team every single season he donned a jersey.
Right.
And so that plus minus is even more impacted by competitive nature and the depth and capability of the other players on the team. For him to have that number, that says everything.
Well, and take, you know, and this, you know, this is his first season, but there's a reason why the Celtics had the single greatest turnaround of any team in NBA history in 79-80. You know, it wasn't because, you know, oh, we got ML Carr. Well, that's great. No doubt. You had Maxwell already. It was Larry Bird. You know, Larry Bird was the difference between a bad team and a Eastern Conference finalist team. Just him, you know? So we get these blinders on about what we see, and you go back to the numbers and people want to talk about LeBron and they want to talk about MJ. And I agree, LeBron has probably, you know, surpassed what Bird has done. And that's controversial of itself. But the gap between LeBron and Bird isn't that deep. You know, I mean, three-time MVP, you know, three-time NBA champion, you know, five-time NBA finalist, you know, dream team, blah, 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 blah.
And dragged his butt through the last couple seasons. I mean, that's the other thing, you know? And again, that's all part of it. I guess maybe that's where you take your hat off to LeBron. But you also have to take your hat off to just science, right? Like, these guys weren't making this kind of money.
No.
The game wasn't making this kind of money.
Right.
You know, their conditioning and everything was really left up to them and maybe, you know, a personal trainer. I mean, what sports science has gone through since that time, who knows? Maybe they would have kept Larry in a completely different physical condition. Not because Larry wasn't a worker and didn't eat right and maybe he didn't. I have no idea. You know, but remember, guys back then were smoking cigarettes and drinking beers. You know what I mean? And nobody in the NBA, I'm not saying that they're not doing some of that, but most of the, you know, the margin, you know, in the league for performance, many of them are following the Ray Allen, you know, sort of eating very healthy, shying away from alcohol. And I'm not saying they don't tip a few back, but I would say, I bet they limited extensively. And we know many, I mean, I think Tommy was a smoker through most of his season. I mean, most of his career.
Oh yeah. I think
most of those guys
were smoking on the bench, smoking in the locker room, smoking. I mean, and you're right. It was different. It's a very different league. Larry hurts his back trying to, you know, tar his mother's driveway. You know, I mean,
LeBron is not out there, you know, tar the driveway or whatever.
He's going to school, but he's not mixing concrete. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, that's the difference. Bird is in the middle of his MVP run and he's tarring his mom's driveway. He clearly had the money to do it. And LeBron's building schools. That just shows you, but LeBron's not building schools without Larry Bird winning three MVPs and going head to head with Magic. So,
popularizing the game on a whole new level.
Right. But in terms of like what's going on in the game, you know, it's just this craziness to me that like we just somehow forget how good Larry Bird was. You know, we just want to kind of gloss it over and be like, well, you know, and yeah, they weren't as good. You know, they did not play defense like the way they do now. They, you know, in the '60s, those guys could not shoot. There's a reason why Russell had 50 rebounds in a game. It's because no one could make a damn shot, you know?
But see, that's why I like the plus minus, because I think it puts the era into context. You know, even though I get it, it was a high flying, high scoring era.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So maybe that inflates the plus minus a little bit there, but it really shouldn't, because the other team can hit shots just the same way. You know what I mean? When you come off the floor and it's 7-point differential for a career, that's disgusting. I think, you know, it would come out in the wash if they wasn't really that much of an impact, but you know, the high scoring, high flying, you know, again, if there's more of an emphasis on offense, that should be noted. If there's more of an emphasis on defense, that should be noted. Yeah, maybe there's less scoring in the game, so the plus minus is inflated a little bit based on that era. But look at the next number. I think you said the next person was Isaiah at 4, right?
Where were we? Which one were we talking about?
The plus minus. Plus minus was 7.2 for Larry, you said?
Yeah, but see that's the box plus minus. They didn't have those numbers in the '60s. So, you know, the oldest.
We're leaving a group out.
Yeah, you're leaving out Russell. So if you look at win shares is probably the easiest way, because that does go back, you know, all the way. And, you know, you got Ezeed McCauley, Isaiah, Bird, Russell, Garnett. That to me seems like a pretty fair representation, particularly the 3, 4, and 5 of guys who played a long time in green. It captures what they did. And you know, there's a bit of an outlier a bit with Isaiah, I think, in the short time he was here. And you probably could say the same of Ezeed McCauley, but you know,
to the whole point about Garnett, it's not even a valid conversation, because Garnett didn't spend his career here. You know what I mean? Even his better years, you know, many of his most talented years, but there's that aspect, and it's an important aspect. And so, you know, even if you try to put it in context, it's not fair, right?
Yeah.
You can't, you know,
Shaq.
Where's Shaq? Like I said, but here's the other one. You know, take Garnett's, what was it, 5 seasons? 6?
Yeah. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 6.
Yeah. 6. Take his 6 and then go, you know, and we know a couple of those were bad because of injury and whatever, you know, but compare him to Larry's final 6. You know, maybe do it that way, you know, or not. You know what I mean? Like, take 2 years. If you take the, what was it, 2 years in Brooklyn for KG and then one in Minnesota? But the one in Minnesota, I think we could throw out in general, right? Because it was kind of not really a year. But if we take the 2 years in Brooklyn, take the last 2 years off of Larry Bird's and then compare six against six. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the meat and potatoes of Larry's career right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're throwing away two tough years, the same two tough years for Garnett.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, only you put him in Brooklyn, you know, where he kind of takes it off a little bit. You know, he suffers through a little injuries. Larry does a little bit along the way, but you compare those six and six, it's going in Bird's favor.
So you do that, and both, if you did that, taking that 6 year stretch, you're saying, well, yes, Garnett had the knee 1 year, Bird had the Achilles. So kind of the injuries somewhat wash out. So you're taking the 90 season, the 89, which is the washout, 88, 87, 86, 85. Two of those 3 years, Larry Bird was the league's MVP. One of them, he had one of the greatest seasons in NBA history.
Yep.
88, he was statistically phenomenal. Went to the finals three of those 6 years.
Yep. Those 6 years, meat and potatoes of his career. Same for Garnett.
Pretty tough.
An injury.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's there. And KG, I know you don't listen to the show.
He does.
But I still, you're still a favorite. Big time favorite.
Yeah, you know? I'm sorry. You're not.
Please don't take offense because, man, he's definitely number one on my character list. There's no doubt. There's the personality, you know, like I'm drawn to KG probably more than even as much as I love Paul Pierce. I'm drawn to KG's personality and his attitude. I like it. You know, it reminds me of me at work. It's just, that's my guy.
Wait, my guy. You go to work, you start like yelling at people and like beating your chest. You do all that.
I can give you references. No, I really like that.
You go up, you start headbutting the wall outside your coworker's office. You're pointing to people before the day starts.
Dude, it's really close to that.
I want video. Make this happen. That's the next YouTube clip from Celtic Stuff Live.
Yep, it'll happen.
Justin KG in his way in the office. It's gotta happen.
Dude, you have no idea. I mean, like literally I could go on a roll. Nobody wants to hear it. But yeah, I absolutely approach work like KG from the way I drive to everything. I mean, yeah, there's pointing.
You're gonna get those 1,000 followers here pretty quick if you do a video acting like KG at the office. Just saying, you know?
All right, so I'm gonna close on this. I was at new hire sales training. We're conducting the sales training for new hires at the company. And, we're getting ready to go out to dinner and we're sitting in the lobby. And all of a sudden I see Kenny Mayne's face. And I'm like, oh yeah, ESPN Sports Center. It's been a while, Kenny. How you doing? And it's like this, I can't remember what it is, cause I don't even have cable at home. I just happen to be in the hotel lobby and they're doing all these like weird sports. And one of them is rock, paper, scissors. And it's a sport and there's a referee in pinstripes.
Oh, yes.
And I'm just telling you, we all sat there and laughed because I started doing commentary of what they might be saying cause it was muted while they're doing it. And I'm telling you, that's a YouTube video that has to happen. The snarky parody of the rock, paper, scissors tournament. Look, what a joke, dude.
That was the Ocho for eight.
Yeah, the Ocho.
It was the Ocho. So, you know, listen, there were some people that were not qualified to do announcing. So I'd send a reel in to ESPN. You might for the next.
No. I just want to make fun of them.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 for the Ocho.
Yes.
You know? That's what's gotta happen. Send in the reel, man.
I mean, dude, seriously, like one of them was like rock, 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 rock. And I was like, what is that? Oh, number seven. Like there's statistics on this stuff, right?
Really?
Like, dude, if he goes rock five times in a row, you know he's going scissors next.
Wow.
No, that's not really statistics, but there is YouTube parody world. Right? That's what I'm saying. Like that is not interesting enough to be on TV. It is not. It's rock, paper, scissors, shoot. You don't get shotgun, right? Like, that's what that is. This is not a tournament. It does not have a pinstripe referee. Like, seriously. Oh, man. It's 1, 2, 3, shoot. Not 1, 2, 3, shoot. Like, I mean, seriously, what do you have to official? And the guy is so serious, John. Like, he is like hovering over the hands, intensely watching like their timing. It is mind-numbingly like weird.
This is why Dodgeball the movie was so good. I mean, you know, that's why it's magical. And but it may spur this to be a real thing, and you may have found your calling.
Yeah, I definitely need to make parody videos of the Ocho. All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. The broadcast will be available on demand on the CLNS Media mobile app. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @CSL_Justin and @CSL_Duke. A heartfelt thank you to everybody for tuning in. And remember that you can help support the show by subscribing to Celtic Stuff Live on iTunes and Stitcher. We've also added it on Google Play and Spotify. We'd love it if you gave us a rating and a review, because your feedback is important to the show. And for staff writer Simeon Elias, executive producer Larry H. Russell, the founder of CLNS Media, Nick Gelso, and my co-host John Duke, I'm Justin Poulin. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Celtic Stuff Live.
Celtic Stuff Live.